I've got to bring in Fevzi, who is the gadget detective standing by. It's a big Happy New Year, Fevzi. I'm going to say it all week, even if people are sick about hearing it.
No, absolutely. Happy New Year to you too.
Fevzi, you've got to be a blinking nightmare over Christmas. What on earth do people buy you? Can't go anything gadget-wise, can they?
Not just over Christmas, James. I'm a blinking nightmare all the time. Yeah, no, people send me money. They just send me money. They just transfer it to my account and notify me and just ask me to let them know what piece of gadgetry I bought with it. They just assume it's not going to be socks or a cardigan. It'll be now, another gadget.
So with your job, do you get stuff to try out, or do you generally buy stuff yourself? How does it work out?
It's both. The stuff that I'm really impressed with, I buy and I keep and I use. And then on top of that, it's a whole raft of gadgets. So like my mobile phone will change more or less every month, for example, because I can't really review them without having tried them, which itself is a nightmare because I'm constantly having to, you know, transfer my data from device to device and so forth. But that's the way. And for the most part, you know, it's on a fixed review period, and then it goes back and another one comes.
How often do you get a bit of tech that you just cannot get on with and just think, what a joke this is?
So I do quite a lot of research before I request something to review, because it's quite expensive in terms of time to review something and then not take it to air. Everything I take to air will score, you know, 70% plus. It effectively has to be a recommendation. So I try and do as much research as possible beforehand, and then I just try and use the item and use it in the way that I think, you know, other people would perhaps try and use it and get a feel for it. But sometimes it happens, and sometimes you get something. I won't name the brand, but there was a translating tool, you know, language translating tool that wasn't a smartphone app. It was a standalone thing. I just couldn't get on with it, and I just said, look, I'm just going to send this back. It's no good for me.
Fair enough.
It's no good for me.
As we always say, people can chip in their tuppence worth, and over the last couple of weeks, people have had some new tech. Somebody who's clearly got a new webcam is Anthony. Thank you for your text, Anthony. He's in Eastbourne. Just wanting to know, very simple question. Can you use a webcam to take photos?
Yeah, so in principle you can. The quality of them will not be great because webcams are primarily designed for video, and video resolution, even a high resolution webcam, is relatively poor resolution. That's to say quality compared to a normal still camera or the camera built into your smartphone. So I would say that the camera on your smartphone, if you have one, is likely to be better. That said, you can. It has to be connected to a computer. If it's on, for example, a Windows 10 computer, then you just hit the start Windows button and then type in the word camera, and you get a list of apps. Some of the apps, if they're third-party apps, not part of Windows, will have to be given privacy permissions, because not every app is allowed to access your camera for sort of privacy reasons unless you give it that permission. So you can use either built-in Windows apps or, you know, let's say you've got a Logitech webcam. Logitech would have provided you a bit of software that comes with it that will give you probably better results. So you can do that, and you can also shoot video clips. Webcam photography is more to do with sometimes it's like if you want to see who's sat at your computer and just, you know, you notice a movement and the camera can fire up and take a picture, that sort of thing. It's not a great way to take photos, not least because you have to have it attached to a computer to do it, which is a bit cumbersome if you're sort of, even with a laptop, if you're trying to walk around, you have it like a laptop and then a USB cable and a webcam. And
Sounds like a right old mess, that does.
Yeah, I mean, the phone, if you've got a phone, the camera in your phone will be more convenient and better quality.
Let's talk about some tips. Lots of people working from home and will continue to do so for, well, what looks like quite a considerable time this year. And what bits of advice would you like to chuck our way?
Okay, so I was thinking about this, and a lot of people are either working as employees from home, or a lot of people now thinking about starting new businesses, having lost their jobs and so forth. So, we've been dependent on our smartphones and tablets for a long time for sort of leisure purposes at home. But then when we go to dust off our laptops or desktop computers, they're often a little bit old and often not quite up to the job. And I was thinking, okay, there's two ways of going at this. Either you upgrade what you've got, or you buy a new one. So I wanted to deal with both. In terms of upgrading, excuse me, the things that will give your computer the best midlife kick. So if your computer's, let's say, 3 or 4 years old and it's sort of struggling a bit, two things that you can do. You can upgrade the RAM memory, that's like the working area of the computer, and or you can change your rotating hard disk drive, the old-fashioned hard disk that maybe came with an older computer, for a brand new, fast, solid-state drive, or SSD. So one of the big problems with both of those upgrades is knowing what to buy. There are many companies that sell them, but there's a company called Crucial, and they have the benefit of having an online scanner. So if you go onto, I think it's uk.crucial.com, it can actually scan the computer that you're on and tell you what RAM it can take, how much of it can take, what SSD is compatible, and offer to sell it to you. And the joy of that is if you do that process and then you get it and for some reason, you know, there's a mistake and it's not compatible, it's guaranteed they'll take it back and refund you in full. So price-wise and quality-wise, Crucial are pretty good, because Crucial is a brand of a company called Micron, and Micron are one of the biggest manufacturers of memory chips in the world, but they just have this retail brand called Crucial. So, you know, I'm quite impressed with that. By upgrading the RAM and particularly upgrading the SSD, you find that an older machine becomes much more responsive, starts up more quickly. Your antivirus scans, instead of taking 12 hours, can take 20 minutes, you know, that sort of thing. Because the SSD, the solid state drive, has no moving parts, which in a laptop, by the way, is particularly great, because first of all, no moving parts means it draws less power. It means it makes less heat, which means that the fans don't kick off as often, which means it's quieter, and in turn you get a longer battery life. So it's sort of win-win-win-win-win.
They're more expensive to buy when you initially buy a computer, a laptop.
Yeah, so it used to be the case that you'd pay a huge premium for a solid-state drive over a conventional drive, but now when you buy a new one, for example, a new laptop, most of them will come with an SSD. It's become standard. And, you know, if you are buying a new machine, and we'll get to that in a minute perhaps, but if you are buying one, I would certainly not buy anything with a hard disk drive in it. It should have an SSD. You know, hard disks are you know, last decade technology, or the decade before that even. So, yeah, get one with an SSD, or upgrade to an SSD. Oh, and by the way, if you are popping a new SSD into your machine, and you might need some help doing that, it's also a good time to think about, if you're still running Windows 7, which you shouldn't be because it's not supported by Microsoft anymore, this is the ideal opportunity to get a new SSD, install Windows 10 on it, and then set it all up, and then keep your old drive as a backup of what you had before, just in case, you know, things go wrong.
All sounds very confusing, Fevzy.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I think I might be texting a 15-year-old to sort that out.
Yeah, it's a bit of a struggle. Most of these things, you know, if you can get a recommendation, if you're not confident to do these updates yourself, the RAM upgrades are usually straightforward. The solid state drives, the physical installation is not too bad, but it's the installing the operating system and everything on it. RAM doesn't matter, because there's nothing stored in RAM when the computer's switched off. But the solid state drive is what stores your Windows, your applications, or your photos and other data that you create. So all of that has to be transferred or reinstalled onto the new drive. So it's a bit of a mission. It's a few hours' work. But you can usually find someone, you know, if you get a recommendation off one of these local websites like nextdoor.co.uk, it's all community local website, look for recommendations, and someone would usually do all of that for you for about £50.
So that's pretty reasonable.
It's not too bad. The other option is to go for a new computer, because if the machine is, say, 4, 5, 6 years old, then, you know, you've got sort of you're at that sort of cusp where maybe it's better not to spend the money on the upgrades but put it towards a new machine. There are these great new machines that I found from a brand that I wasn't previously aware of called Minis Forum. Minis as in small cars, and Forum, all one word. And they produce a computer called the X35G, and it's a mini PC. It's about, I think it's about 6 inches square and about an inch and a half tall. Tiny machine, but a fully fledged computer, lots of 16 gigabytes of RAM, which is plenty, Windows 10 Professional, three different types of SSD upgrade possible inside the machine, and then very modern connections on it. And it's so small that if you don't even want to use that amount of desk space, you can screw it to the back of your monitor and it doesn't take up any space at all. Your monitor effectively becomes an all-in-one PC at that point. It's about and the other thing I like about it is about £300. So if you want to check that out, they've got a good range of these mini computers at minisforum.com, and I've given those 4 stars out of 5.
All right, okay. All right, look, let's just, we've got to be so last year now. Just let's have a couple of your favourite gadgets of the last year, and you are allowed to mention those scales that you, I think, first talked about with me, because I went and bought them, and they've been excellent.
They are good, aren't they?
Well, it's the most weird thing. It's like none of us like really standing on the scales, but this thing links to your phone and it gives you a graph of how you're doing. And I think that's been about the most motivating thing I've ever had, as far as weight, you know, watching your weight thing is concerned. It's the other range of stuff it does as well is quite impressive.
Yeah, so this is the brand is Withings, which is a French brand, and they are at the moment my favourite brand for these sort of fitness connect internet connected fitness things. I think they were the ones that created the world's first internet connected scales, and you say, well, why would I want that? But actually, you know, it is quite useful, because then when you step on the scales and it takes all those measurements, not just your weight but your body fat, how much of you is fat, how much of you is muscle, how much of you is bone, you know, and that's kind of interesting. Say the bone figure doesn't change a lot in a short period, but if that figure starts going down, it might be an indication of something like osteoporosis. You might, you know, need some medical help. Equally, in the Withings range, and there's three of these scales. I think there's, is it called cardio, body cardio? I can't remember what it's called now. The top end one measures the velocity of the blood coursing through your veins. And you think, well, why is that important? Why would I even want to know that? And it's to do with, you know, as people get heart disease, their arteries tend to harden. And become the walls of the blood vessels become less flexible, and so, you know, onset of heart disease. When that happens, because there's less give in the walls of the blood vessels, the blood hurtles through it faster. None of the kinetic energy is absorbed by the elasticity of the walls. So if the speed of your blood through your veins is a little bit on the fast side, that again can be a general indication that your cardiovascular health may not be good. Your blood vessels may be starting to harden a little bit, and it's just a tip to maybe, you know, get some exercise and make some lifestyle changes before, you know, you start getting things like chest pain, you know, when obviously you want to nip it in the bud.
Also amazing for me, two things on that, is that your recommendation when it came, and I was actually going to pay for it, and it wasn't cheap, this thing, I have to say. It was about 140 quid, and I was just thinking, okay, look, I haven't got a gym membership, I'm just going to go for it, that kind of thing. I then saw that thing, it said code offer or coupon offer, and I thought, well, hang on, if they've got a space on that,
go look for it.
Yeah, and I did. I found one, and I got a third of the price off it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah. Search for codes. I mean, when you search for codes on Google or whatever, unfortunately, a lot of the codes that are published are dead or were never working. There are sort of third-party tools. Like there's a browser add-on called Honey that when you go to make a purchase, it will intervene and offer you codes. The problem with those sort of browser add-ons is that they collect a lot of information about you. So you better be sure you're comfortable with that. So again, it's this thing about the balance of convenience against privacy. It's very convenient, but it's not very private.
One final question for you here. Malcolm's dropped me a note here on email. You can do so anytime, by the way, canon@bbc.co.uk. Happy New Year, James and Fevesy here. Could you please ask your techie guy, that's you, to if it's possible to repair a Kobo e-reader. Problem is the on-off switch being soft plastic has all but disintegrated, meaning it's not impossible to turn on or off. If not possible to repair it, is it possible to transfer the books to another device?
Right, okay, good questions. Everything is in principle repairable, but I wouldn't try and repair a Kobo e-reader because they're not extremely expensive devices, and the cost of the repair would not be cheap. Plus, the company that was marketing the Kobos, I don't think are supporting them in the, you know, the, and with an e-reader, it's very important. So that when you buy a Kindle, for example, from Amazon, you know, the Kindle e-book is a very healthy infrastructure. The Kobo, less so, although you can put non-proprietary formats of books on there. So because it's not supported, and because the device is old, and because you'd struggle to get it repaired, I would not bother to get it repaired. With regard to getting those books across, yes, you can. You need to get a piece of software to convert the formats sometimes. The problem is that with the Kindles, which are by far the most ubiquitous, they use a proprietary format, which is, you know, Amazon trying to control everything, essentially. But you can get third-party e-readers. But what I would do is, instead of getting a e-reader, I would consider, if you already have a tablet, or if you have a use for a tablet, then instead of an e-reader, you could do that and get something that does both. You know, sophisticated e-readers are still quite basic compared to tablets. And the only benefit that they have a couple of benefits. One is that they are only an e-reader, and therefore you have fewer distractions. One of the things about using an e-reader app on a tablet is, although it looks, you know, it looks great and fast and animated screens and all of that, you know, you get notifications from all sorts of other things, so it actually interrupts the reading experience. And also, some people prefer the screens on e-readers, you know, what they call e-ink, which is a sort of a passive technology. It doesn't necessarily have a light shining at you. It uses reflected light, rather like the page of a book. So I would say, don't fix the Kobo. If it's working sufficiently to transfer out the books, transfer them onto a computer. Consider using an app on a tablet as a replacement, and you may need to convert the formats into a compatible format, depending on which software you choose to use on the tablet or your new e-reader.
Excellent. All right, Malcolm. There, he's got a month to sort that out, and then it can come back for when you're here in a month's time. Fevzi, good talking to you. Ran out of time. Nice stuff, and happy New Year once again. What's a bit of tech that you're trying out at the moment? Just tease us for something that we might be hearing about in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I've been playing with a lot of synthesizers, very old retro. Retro synths are back in fashion, and companies are making synthesizers with the same analog technology that you used to get 40 years ago, and it's a delight because they're recreating these old classics. So these old sort of Roland and Oberheim synths and Korg. Yeah. Or never say Moog. People get upset. They insist that it's Moog after Robert Moog.
Oh, right, okay.
You can't say Moog around here, sorry.
Well it's an education if nothing else. Fevzi, lovely stuff. People can find out more, the Gadget Detective, they can find you online and on social media as well.
Yeah, so if you've got a question you didn't get a chance to get through, at Gadget Detective on Twitter, you can find me there and I'll do my best to help you.
Great stuff. Nice talking to you. Fevzi, have a nice one. We'll catch up with you in a few weeks.